are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci with another program to put some money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. Let's do this thing. Super Bowl 52, Sunday. New England Patriots laying 4.5. The total remains 48. We've got a ton of props to break down. We're going to be doing it with Mark Lawrence, one of the best in the business. Playbook's been all over Super Bowl 52. Mark's got a great column up over at USA Today Sports Weekly, weekly newspaper, available online, as well as Mark goes through all the prop history, shares some props. So we'll run through the column and we'll talk some props and Super Bowl with Mark Lawrence. We'll also talk some NBA basketball with Mark Lawrence. And even though it's Super Bowl 52 this week, the NBA is really taking center stage, man. Earlier in the week, the Blake Griffin deal took over the sports world. It was opening night for the Super Bowl, but Blake Griffin was the one that was trending. Blake Griffin was a bigger story than opening night of the Super Bowl. We got John Wall. It's amazing this week in the NBA. Blake Griffin's no longer a Clipper. He's on the Pistons. John Wall is out 6 to 8 weeks right now. And boom, you don't know what you have until it's gone. The Cleveland Cavalier players are always blaming Kevin Love for everything. Well, Love gets no love, and neither does the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. Been carnage across the board in the association. We got a bunch of games on the board here tonight, and I'm liking. There's a lot of good situational spots tonight in the association. Doesn't matter what the situational spot is for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. They're going to find a way to win anyways. Coming out of the All-Star break on the road in Calgary, down 2-1 late in the hockey game. Not only do they come back and win, they end up winning by 2 freaking goals. They end up winning 4-2. But last night, the biggest story in the sports world was, of course, Alex Smith getting traded for the Kansas City Chiefs to the Washington Redskins. The Washington Redskins, they had Kirk Cousins and have had Kirk Cousins for years, but for one reason or another, they were never willing to just sit down and give him a long-term deal. And in you know, Washington's a stupid city to begin with. I mean, let's look at Congress. But like, how stupid are you? You don't want to give him a long-term deal, so instead you franchise tag him, which you're paying him in the top five every year. Now you lose him. now at least you got something out of it, which is pretty good actually. But you know, you're losing him. And when I say, you know, you actually gave up a cornerback as well in the deal. It's a strange deal if you're Washington. Now, from a quarterback standpoint, I like Alex Smith, and I think Kirk Cousins is overrated. I've been a Kirk Cousins defender. And we're on the Fantasy Sport Television Network right now. So a lot of people look at Kirk Cousins from a fantasy standpoint. But in a reality standpoint, man, he's a better Ryan Fitzpatrick. He'll turn over the ball in the fourth quarter. He's going to make a mistake. He's penny wise. He's pound crazy. He's a really good competitor. He's a tough guy. I like him. But I don't want to make him the highest paid player in the league. Alex Smith is a winner, man. Alex Smith went undefeated with the Utah Utes. Alex Smith was a winner with the San Francisco 49ers, and he's been a winner with the Kansas City Chiefs. Are you going to win a Super Bowl with Alex Smith and the Washington Redskins? No, but you're going to be a competitive football team. And you got the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl right now. You got the Cowboys going to be back next year. You're dealing with some flashy teams in a division in which you're expected to freaking produce. So if you're the Washington Redskins, it's strange what you did, but Alex Smith is a good quarterback. Would I have made the deal if I was them? No. I would have just drafted a damn quarterback and moved on with my life because I'm not winning the Super Bowl with Alex Smith anyways. But I'm just tired of seeing this. Everyone talking about Kirk Cousins like he's Tom freaking Brady or something like that, all right? He's not. Tom Brady plays for the New England Patriots, and we're going to tell you whether they're going to win or lose. We're going to break it down. Props, add more. Game Time Decision continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Countdown to Super Bowl 52 continues as well. Who better to help us break it down than Mark Lawrence at playbook.com. Available on your mobile device, of course. Let's go over to the Google Store, Playbook Cube. For the last couple of weeks, it's been a wealth of Super Bowl information, data, trends, picks, props, and everything else in between. Mark, it's always a pleasure. Another Super Bowl.
I can't believe it, Gabe. It's been a year since we last talked about the Super Bowl, an annual sort of thing, but it really flew by, to say the least. And before you know it, next weekend we're going to be talking exclusively basketball with football in the rearview mirror.
I think the first Super Bowl that you and I broke down that we did, Mark, I think it was the Bears and the Colts, mid-2000s or so.
Well, you have to kind of prod me a little bit because it could well have been, and what we talked about, I couldn't recall. But but nonetheless, I know we've done a few of them together, and they keep flying by, like I say.
Yeah. What Super Bowl was your first Super Bowl that you vividly remember watching?
Oh my goodness, that's a good question.
Super Bowl I.
No, but you know something. There's a story about Super Bowl I, and I had a guy at the racetrack that I told him. I says, look, I says, if you can get me a tape of Super Bowl I, I'll give you $500,000. And he says, you're kidding me. I says, no, I'll do it. Well, what happens is Super Bowl I, when it did air, was aired back in the day when it was reel to reel tape that they were doing it on. And after the Super Bowl was over, they reused the tape and taped another program. So there really is no footage of Super Bowl I to be found anywhere by anybody. That's why it would be a coup if a person could lay their hands on the film from Super Bowl I.
Yeah, and there was no cell phones either. No one has it on a cell phone.
Exactly.
That's amazing, exactly. Isn't it? At the time, like with hindsight, just for the actual reel-to-reel tape, that they said, no, the reel's too expensive. We're just going to, because, I was in a band, and I know I've recorded over music and stuff like that, where you're like, well, you know, these new reels are, they're expensive, those reel-to-reel tapes. So it's funny that even the NFL in those days, like they're in a network, I guess it was NBC, right? They recorded over it. No, we're going to reuse this tape. It's still good. Because, yeah, you can use it over and over and over, like, you know, a lot of times. That's interesting. Of course, Super Bowl I, too. My favorite picture, actually, there's still shots. My favorite picture is of Len Dawson having a cigarette at halftime.
Oh, yeah, that was cool, wasn't it? You know.
Yeah, and he's got a Coca-Cola in front of him. Like, well, the quarterback.
Better than a beer, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a Coca-Cola and a smoke, and it's halftime of the Super Bowl, and he sort of looks beat up, and he's like, So I brought it up, Mark, because I didn't remember the Minnesota Vikings. So my first Super Bowl was the Dallas Cowboys and the Denver Broncos, the 77 season. So like that's so like 78, actually, 1978 Super Bowl. So, you know, so ever since then, I'm sort of in on every one of them. And it's been hit or miss. I had a rough run in Super Bowls for a few years, a couple of years ago, but I got back on track last year. I did very well. I always do well with the props, so let's jump in right now. You know, Mark, the Philadelphia Eagles players, they've really embraced the underdog role. I mean, they're wearing dog masks, and, no one ever believes in us. It's really working for them. You know, we're first ever one seed to be underdogs. You know, we can go down the list of people not believing in them. And they're going to be able to play that card a bit now because technically they're underdogs. But if the Philadelphia Eagles are watching TV and they're watching shows like this, everybody believes in them. It's not like a case like, no one believes in the Eagles. No, guys, everybody freaking believes in you guys. Everyone's betting on you more so than they're betting on the Patriots.
This is unbelievable, Gabe. I mean, we're talking about the New England Patriots, and the money's going the other way in a football game where Tom Brady's involved, and I can't believe it. They opened up this line. It was bet to Philadelphia. It continues to keep coming in on Philadelphia here. I'm wondering if and when the Patriots players do come to the table, when they go to the window, will it make a dent in the number? Everything I'm hearing out of Vegas is no. This game's going to probably settle in at 4 or maybe even 4.5. It's been all Philadelphia money.
Me too. I keep waiting for that. I keep waiting for that Patriot buyback. Maybe they're waiting still. You know, there was a 175 that popped up at MGM, and I saw it was a Jay Rudd over there. Said that, somebody walked in right away and bet pretty big on that one. But, it's sort of like Floyd Mayweather fights, right? I mean, if you're betting on Floyd Mayweather, you wait till the final second because everyone hates him, and everyone's going to bet against him. And, it's almost that feeling with the Eagles and the Patriots now. I don't know if there's going to be a mass Patriot buyback. I'm not sure there is.
I don't think there is either here. In fact, I think there's going to be so much of the public on Philadelphia that even if the sharps and it's not a typical sharp play to go bet New England in this game either, Gabe, to begin with.
Yeah, no sharp wants to lay 4.5, 5. It's a crooked number. You know,
there's
exactly.
No question about that. So they're not in a hurry to do that. The only reason they'll do that is because of what they would perceive to be value. You know, value from the standpoint that this number has been driven so low that we can possibly make a play on New England in the football game. But the bottom line here is a ton of money to Philadelphia, and I don't think this game's going to move, like I say, more than the 4 or 4.5 we're currently seeing right now.
No, you're right. And There'll be a couple of $100,000 bets that come in on the Pats and stuff. But like you said, I think the Johnny Public will be in line just pounding the Eagles all day. And Malinsky brought it up earlier in the week, and I think some people will do this too. Guys that, a professional gambler is not really in the business of laying 4.5 in a Super Bowl or 4, especially with a Patriots team that, generally, margin of victory is 3.5, 3.8, whatever the hell it is. Every Super Bowl is close with these guys. But they will play the money line. I think they're waiting to see if that money line goes to 160. If that money line hit 160 or something, I think then a lot of people would jump on the Pats on the ML.
Well, there would be value that way. You take a look at what the Eagles did, and they were 3-point dogs, and you were able to play them at plus 140, 150. So if you can get New England at minus 160 for a game that should have been, for all intents and purposes, 6 points, there then would be value on New England on the money line.
Now, this is a Super Bowl rematch from Super Bowl 39, and no one's really talking about that game at all. Because I guess they feel it's a long time ago. There's a lot of younger people, and it feels like that game was so long ago. We've heard a couple of, low-hanging fruit Donovan McNabb puke jokes, etc. Like, it's like the Weber timeout stuff. It's going to come up. But it's amazing, Mark, and you wrote about this in USA Today Sports Weekly. The similarities are really striking to the numbers of these teams, Mark, from Super Bowl 39 to the Super Bowl teams. Both teams, top five scoring defenses. Both teams allowed 260 points exact. This year, both top five defenses allowed 295 points. The Eagles, Patriots, 296. Offensively, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah, Philadelphia scored 457 points on the season. New England, 458 points on the season.
Wow.
It's eerily similar. It's unbelievable how closely matched these two football teams are.
And when those teams played in Super Bowl 39, the Pats were 7-point favorites, 24-21 final score, 3-point game.
Exactly right. A close call football game. And I'll say this, my good friend Howard Eskin from Philadelphia, he was part of my USA Today article story, and they cut that part of it out because they didn't feel it balanced with the props. But nonetheless, I talked to Howard. I got his point of view on it. And he brought out the point about in the Super Bowl 39, how the year after was Spygate for New England. That's when they were exposed as being cheaters.
Yeah.
And Howard made the comment and the point. He says, we know they cheated. We just don't know how they did in Super Bowl 39.
So USA Today didn't like that?
They didn't like that. I guess they didn't want to take that that forward step, and the headline comes out, USA Today says New England cheats.
Well, these guys, man, they're monitoring the prop pick. He's even these guys. So what was Eskin's prop pick, though?
Well, he more or less kind of like leans on me, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. So Eskin was just in there taking a shot, calling them cheaters.
Exactly.
So they're like, no.
But he did say this one thing, and I'll say this. He says of all the years he's followed the Philadelphia Eagles for over 30 years now, and he's their sideline reporter this year, this team has more chemistry than any New England Philadelphia team that he's ever been associated with. He thinks the chemistry in this team is unparalleled.
I like Howard. It slipped my mind. I should have got him on this week. I'm a fan. We've had Howard on over the years quite a bit from the whip. I like Howard. It's funny you say that, too, that he says that, because I noticed that. I remember when Carson Wentz got hurt against the Rams, and they won the game anyways. Foles came in. They won the game. But I remember when he got hurt, it wasn't like they were all devastated. They were laughing, they were dancing, and I remember them saying, we're more than just one player, next man up, we believe in Foles, except you could tell it wasn't lip service. Like, when I was looking at them, I was like, these guys don't look worried or concerned. Like, yeah, we won, but we just lost Tom Brady and we're screwed. You can tell, and I brought it up, Mark, they're vagabonds, they're misfits. They're a bunch of guys that nobody wanted. Nick Foles has been kicking around. Nick Foles, ha-ha, this and that, Nick Foles. Jim Schwartz, he's a bad coach with the Lions, hasn't gotten a job again, even though I don't think he was a bad coach with the Lions, but that's the perception. Doug Peterson, career backup, had to work his way up from a JUCO community college, coaching for free, working his way up the ladder. Alshon Jeffrey, nobody wanted to give him the big money. He had to sign a one-year deal, bet on himself. Jay Ajayi gets cut, released by or traded by the Dolphins, even though he's their best player. LeGarrette Blount, 18 touchdowns last year, let go. Chris Long's been let go. There's a lot of guys on that team. Ronald Darby traded from the Bills, even though he's a big-time draft pick. There's a lot of guys on that team that have been screwed over, laughed at, left behind, or poked, Mark.
Yeah, they're blue-collar, patchwork-type football team is what they are, and they're melding together perfectly. And you hit it on the head about Doug Peterson. Remember, back in his day when he was a quarterback in the NFL, he backed up Brett Favre in the Super Bowl. He was the backup quarterback as well.
Yep.
So he kind of fits this whole persona, what's going on with Philadelphia. And
interesting you say that. Brett Favre is actually going to be speaking before the game to the Eagles.
Is he really?
A little bit of a tidbit. Peterson's flying him in. I'm glad you brought it up. It just triggered it. Saturday night. So he's not in a room before the game Sunday, but Saturday night at the final team meeting, Brett Favre is the head speaker.
Well, that's terrific. That's a wise move on
Peterson's part. Yeah, if you're an Eagle player, he's a Packer, but you're going to listen to Brett Favre. Brett Favre knows. He's going to say, guys, this is it. You know, I've been here. You're going to listen to him.
Well, they've taken on this dog moniker role, like you said, Gabe, not only because they've been underdogs and throughout the playoffs, but because of their personalities, who they are, this blue-collar football-type football team. They are indeed the true dogs of the Super Bowl, and I think that's another reason America is endearing themselves to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, I'm buying in, Mark. I'm taking the points.
Well, you know something, Gabe? I got this game out everywhere where I'm selling it, just between you and I and the listeners of the show, so too am I. And, and I'll tell you this also, there's a great stat inside this game that we talked about the Eagles being underdogs, okay? They've been underdogs now every game in the playoffs. There have only been, in the course of the Super Bowl, seven teams that have made it to the Super Bowl where they've been underdogs back-to-back games to get to the Super Bowl like Philadelphia has done that. None of them has ever lost to the spread
one
in a
of them,
Super Bowl game.
One of them off the top of my head, Baltimore Ravens.
There you go, the Baltimore Ravens, exactly.
Who's the other one?
You know, I off the top of my head, I can't recall. I think the Denver Broncos. Remember the year Denver went on where they dogged three times in a row?
Yeah, they were dogs in the Super Bowl against the Packers and Brett Favre. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they were dogs three times, you know, coming into that Super Bowl.
Because, off the top of my head, I knew Baltimore because I'm an idiot. I was on Baltimore in both playoff games, and instead of riding it, I took San Francisco.
There you go, the other side.
Yeah,
but it's a great stat. It just shows you that underdog momentum carries over in Super Bowl games. We'll see whether it's right or wrong this year.
All right, so let's go over some of the prop trends that you and your colleagues have come up with. I've done a lot of work on the props as well, specifically some player props. But team to score first wins the game. Is it a cliche? Is it a stereotype? Not really. Six of the last seven Super Bowls, Mark, the team that scores first. And sort of correlates with Philadelphia here a little bit, considering that New England hasn't scored a point in the first quarter ever of a Super Bowl in seven Super Bowls with Brady.
Yeah, but it didn't work last year, though, Gabe.
Remember,
Atlanta Falcons got on the board first, so that string got snapped. It was six straight going into last year, so it's an indicator that if you score first, you have a pretty good chance of winning that Super Bowl game.
Team to score last wins the game, 12 of 12, last 12 years.
Yeah, that's amazing, and that happened to be obviously New England last year in the overtime, so it worked out really well for them as well.
All right, will there be a two-point conversion attempt? Yes, in four of the last 5 years.
Yep, and we're seeing more and more of that being the case now. We're seeing it. That's the style. It's the vogue in the National Football League, two-point attempts. I think you're going to see that again in the Super Bowl this year as well.
Our boy Ian Cameron Babano came up with a nice prop. I give him credit. He found one. Will there be a flea flicker in the game? Will there be a flea flicker? Plus 290. And both the Patriots and Eagles have run flea flickers in the playoffs.
Wow, that's unbelievable. That's a nice, neat stat. Will there be a flea flicker?
Yeah, it's kind of,
eye on that. Yeah,
exactly. Not every book's going to have that, but it was Bet Online that he found it at. Will there be a flea flicker? Plus, you know, it's kind of a frilly prop. I'd say I'm not betting that if it was plus 125 or plus 150, but at plus 280, you know, that's worth it. Plus 280, plus 290, that's worth it.
I think it's a value in that. Yeah, good job by Ian. He does a great job. He's a real nice handicapper. We got to see him down in Costa Rica. And I'm going to throw one more quick one. I'm going to insert one on you here, Gabe. I did it in the coffee club here this morning, an ugly one. Will there be a quarterback there, or a player that leaves the game because of a concussion symptom?
Yeah.
Are you going to bet on a brain injury in this football game? That's the question.
I say yes.
You're going to get yesterday. I think it's plus 120
it's
or 130.
Kind of morbid. You're going to be cheering for someone to get their head knocked off.
Exactly. But
Gronkowski
being floated
is my
out there
prime,
for sure.
prime candidate.
Exactly. Exactly.
But no, I'm not going to bet that.
No, I wouldn't nominate either. Just only because I tried to submit that to the USA Today and they didn't accept it. The editor says to me, I don't like the spirit of that one.
Yeah, of course. No, you don't like the spirit of that. I'm not down with death pools and stuff like that either, although me and Teddy got into it last week. I told Teddy it's my goal to be around for Super Bowl 75. And he's like, God, you're not going to make it to 75. I took offense. I'm like, yeah, I will. So I said, I'll bet on that if you want. So, yeah, we're trying to set some action on that. All right, will at least one quarter be scoreless? No, in six of the last 8 years.
Yeah, that's an interesting prop. The question is, will we find a scoreless quarter here? We're likely to see that, maybe perhaps even this first quarter in the Super Bowl game, given the history of first quarters and these two defenses being top five scoring defenses here. I would bet yes on that. I kind of flip that and go, yes, I think there will be a scoreless quarter in this Super Bowl.
Mark, one that I'm going to be leaning on, and it's funny because in the past eight Super Bowls, looking at the prop report that you sent, courtesy of Wager Talk, last eight Super Bowls, more points in the second half or first half prop, it's split. It's been 4-4. But when Tom Brady, it's different. Once again, due to the fact that the New England Patriots are historic slow starters in these games, and let's not forget, both Jacksonville and both Tennessee got off to leads against the New England Patriots. Tom Brady, slow to start. He was slow to start in the Super Bowl last year. Seven Super Bowls for Tom Brady, Mark. It's 5-1-1, more points scored in the second half.
That's a strong stat here, Gabe, especially given the fact that it is New England. And number, I think, even more relevant is the fact that they don't score in the first half of those games. Very conservative, very sluggish to begin the football games. I like it again this year. I think I would play over New England the second half, under the first half as well.
You and I are on the same page with the first quarter, under 9.5. Hey, listen, if there's two field goals, fine. If we get burned, if there's a touchdown and a field goal, it is what it is, but I'll take my chances that there isn't. I can see, a nice little 4 or 5 minute drive to start the game. Maybe Philly goes down the field, takes 6-7 minutes, kicks a field goal. We only really need a stop or two on a series, Mark, to get the under 9.5.
And you've got two good defenses here, too. New England's defense is really worthy of being here in the Super Bowl. We all know what Philadelphia's defense is all about. We've only seen 15 total points scored in first quarters in seven Super Bowl games under Bill Belichick.
Wow.
That's an average of just over 2 points in Super Bowl games with Bill Belichick here. If they get to 10 points in this game, they deserve anybody to put the over in the football game and cash the ticket. I'll be on the other side with you.
You and I are in agreement with the over 4.5 sacks. Both teams can get after the quarterback. The Patriots have 11 sacks in two playoff games. Tom Brady gets rid of the ball quickly, and he'll rather throw it away than get hit. But I think there'll be a couple of times where it'll just be inevitable. He's going to get caught in it. And conversely, I think Foles will run into a couple of sacks. The Patriots, Mark, they're more of a finesse speed defense up front now. That's why they give up 4.6 yards per rush on the ground. You can play smash mouth. That's why I think Blunt and Jai can have some success against these guys. But one thing that they do, they're very fast, and they do get to the quarterback.
Yes, they do. A speedy defense on both sides, actually. In fact, Gabe, if you go back and look at the last two Super Bowls, there have been a combined total of 22 sacks in the last two Super Bowl games alone. So it's been a sack fest of late here in the Super Bowl games. New England being involved in those contests here, I think I need to go over the total 4.5 again this year as well.
All right, a couple of loose tidbits. We'll wrap up here. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll just talk some NBA. We'll talk tonight's card because we've got to pad the bankroll for the Super Bowl. But Dame Malinsky contributed to the USA Today column with Mark, and unlike Eskin, he wasn't talking about the Patriots being cheaters, so he made it. Nick Foles, passing yards, he put 235. It's up to 247.5 right now at most spots. And Ted Savransky, Teddy contributed and said he likes LeGarrette Blount under rushing yards. And it's funny, I think Blount's gonna have an impact on the game, but I could see Blount scoring a touchdown or two more so than racking up a lot of yards.
I agree with that 100%, Gabe. I think he might find the end zone as opposed to gaining, churning yards out on the ground. Blount, I think Teddy's right on with that call. As far as Dave is concerned, a little bit atypical, but if you look at Dave's rationale in the Nick Foles over the total play, he loves the fact that Peterson will not take his foot off the pedal. We saw that in the final minute of a football game when he could have kneeled and taken three kneels and gotten out at halftime, but he ended up throwing the football instead. He's an offensive put it down your throat kind of a coach here, and he thinks Foles will take advantage of that. Dave goes over the total, the passing total with Foles in that game as well.
I like Tom Brady over the completions. Nice prop builder prop. Danny Amendola, 8 catches, plus 300 over at uh, over at UWager. But, yeah, we could go on and on and on with these props. But as far as LeGarrette Blount, quick, guys. LeGarrette Blount scores a touchdown plus 225. I think he will. And James White, the guy's a freaking touchdown machine, man. That's what he does. James White's getting into the end zone, and they're paying you plus 187. I think that's pretty good for a guy that basically has scored, I think, in six straight playoff games. Quick break on the other side. We'll talk about tonight's NBA and CBB card with Mark Lawrence. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci, and you know what? It's Super Bowl 52, and we as gamblers are very excited, you know, breaking down all the props and the angles and the matchups and the trends. But it's kind of been a ho-hum Super Bowl media week. Nothing's really going on. There's no big storylines to the game, really. And I'm sure it slightly irritates the NFL that it's Super Bowl week, yet online on Twitter, the NBA is what's trending. I mean, the NBA, man, it's a teenager sport. You know, the younger demographic love it. More of a social media presence than the NFL. The NBA is just kicking ass. Like, it's Super Bowl week, Mark, and more people are talking about Kevin Love, you know, fracturing his wrist or his hand and his patella tendon, whatever it was, than they are the Super Bowl last night. Earlier in the week, the big blockbuster deal with Blake Griffin. You know, Alex Smith and the Kirk Cousins stuff got a little bit of run last night, even more so than the Super Bowl did, but man, the NBA is really just in the spotlight on a nightly basis this year.
It is, Gabe. It's fast and it's furious. And as you say, the millennials are really digging it, especially people that love to bet the sport. The in-gamers love the NBA. It's unbelievable, which all leads to what the NBA wants to do with as far as legalized gambling goes and become a player in this game, because there's a lot of money to be made by both the players and the leagues if they participate.
Well, when people start doing this, you know, I think playbook subscriptions are going to go way up because people are going to need to know the information about the association. So information like this, we got the Memphis Grizzlies and the Pacers on the board tonight. I cashed a ticket with the Pacers the other night against Charlotte. It was a nice pick. Even though they played back-to-back against Cleveland, you know, the Pacers are a scrappy team back home. Now they're laying 7. I'm not fully in love with it, laying the 7, but situationally, Mark, looks like it's a great spot according to your database tonight for the Pacers.
Yeah, these are what we call double one-rest games, where each team comes in with exactly one day of rest, Gabe, and these two teams have personalities on opposite sides of the coin. Memphis 1-6 to the spread in double one-day rest games. Indiana 6-1 the other way when they're at home in these contests. So whether you like that stuff or you don't, what you do is you use this to at least keep you out of the Memphis side of this basketball game, but Indiana, I think, ends up being the right side of this game.
All right, so speaking of Charlotte, I cashed a ticket with Charlotte the other night. So Charlotte, though, not a great road team, been inconsistent. You know, there's rumors of Kemba Walker getting dealt. And I'll tell you what, I'm trying to load this up right now, but, of course, it's not opening. But nevertheless, Mark, the Atlanta Hawks, scrappy home dog, haven't they been? Like, these guys have been a covering freaking machine at home.
Well, they've been terrific at home, and what works here, Gabe, is out at the Coffee Club. We mentioned that Charlotte really struggles on hump day Wednesdays in conference games, 1-4. Atlanta at home Wednesdays, division games, 4-1. So you've got what I would call a live home dog here in Atlanta against a Charlotte team that could likely play down to their level.
Yeah, NBA is going to be real interesting now with the Cavs, Mark, with Kevin Love out. It's funny. It's almost the irony here is unbelievable in that they blame Kevin Love for everything all the time. Now he gets hurt. Now let's see how they do, too.
I got a little bit of surprise that they're going to play a lot better here. Not so much because Love's out of the lineup, just because of a do factor, a return to the mean by the Cleveland Cavaliers, because they simply can't play any worse. This football team or basketball team has been pathetic this season here. And I think with Love being out, what they'll end up doing is for 5 or 6 weeks while he's out, they'll find a way to meld these players eventually into the lineup here. I still don't want to fade Cleveland when it comes to be Eastern Conference playoff time, but right now you can't touch them with the 10-foot pole.
Mark, I wonder if it's going to catch up to Michigan State and Tom Izzo, but he can't run forever, man. He can say, I'm not, you know, now's not the time. It's never really been the time with Izzo. And it's getting pretty serious, Mark, when you know on a CBS national broadcast, the network of Matlock and the safest network in the nation, and you're on national television, and after the game, They don't ask you about the win. They're like, Coach, do you have any response to all these, you know, what's going on here? Now's not the time. I want to celebrate the win. Didn't go over too well, Mark. And like I said, Izzo, he's got a lot of credibility. The media love him. But this, it's not good. It's not good. Like, we're finding out about some stuff here. It's not Sandusky, but there's covers up of rapes and chicks getting punched in the face by assistant coaches. It's pretty ugly, man. And Izzo, you know Izzo's feeling the pressure right now, Mark. Do you think it has an impact? I hate to be callous, but how much do you think it's going to catch up to these guys right now? Because the media is not going away, and it's only going to pick up on Izzo now.
Well, you know, this almost looks like an Art Briles type situation in Michigan State. And yep. if it is, we're going to probably see the last of Tom Izzo this year. And that'll be a shame because he's been a really highly credible basketball coach. Everybody loves his style, the way he produces basketball teams that cut down nets year after year. And he's got a great team this year, maybe arguably the best team in college basketball this year for all intents and purposes. But You have to answer to the drummer. It's happened on his watch, and he's going to have to answer to these allegations here sooner than later here. I think it is going to wear on the basketball team. I think it's going to take away from the talent that they have, and I think this will be the last year Tom Izzo will be on the sidelines at Michigan State.
Wow. Wow, you're the first one I heard to say this, and you know what? I can almost see it. He's probably going to try to just sort of dodge it, get through the year and step down. Yeah, well, you know, but it's – like, people don't realize, guys, this the gymnastics stuff at Michigan State. Because even me, Mark, I was like, why are they on D'Antonio and Izzo for this? He has nothing to do with the gymnastics program. He has nothing to do with the gymnastics doctor, etc. But let's be real at the same point in time. You can't tell me that Tom Izzo's been there for as long as he did, and he didn't know what was going on in other athletic programs or other sports. But basically, because of the fact that 156 freaking girls were assaulted on the Michigan State property, people have started to look at, you know, what else happened here. And now it's like, oh, God, 31 rapes on the football team. Oh, my God. And then everyone's like, no, not Izzo, please. And then, yep, here it is. Cover up here. You know what? Are you remembering this? Let's smear the girl. Cops didn't believe her. One case, Michigan State. And the basketball, everyone, they ridiculed her so much, Mark, she filed a federal lawsuit of, like, federal discrimination, like, out of corruption. State and the university didn't care. The local cop didn't care. The university laughed at me. They got some answering to do in East Lansing, man.
This is Baylor all over again.
It really is.
Sorry to say that. It's Baylor all over again. It's Penn State all over again, because if it happens under your watch, you're responsible. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And you know Izzo smelled the smoke, and he knew there was fire here. Eventually, he's going to have to step forward and be a man about this.
Last thing on this, and we got to get out of here. But last thing on this, Mark, what drives me crazy is these college football coaches talk about honor, and they act like they're great guys and basketball coaches and all this type stuff. And I don't understand it. I get it. If a kid smokes weed and, you know, we're not going to tell anyone. But, like, you know, I don't mind the envelope. Here's a gift card. You know what I mean? Here's a meal. Here's a suit. Here's a car. That's all standard stuff. But when you're a coach and you're overlooking the fact that your players are raping girls because they're good athletes, you got a problem. Like, you're going to hell have a problem type of stuff. And secondly, Mark, these guys, these coaches don't have a problem with their athletes, yet I wonder if they'd feel the same way if it was their own daughters that were raped. And these guys, they don't let their own daughters anywhere near their own players, Mark, right? But they don't mind if, you know, your daughter gets raped by their player. That's what angers me about it.
That's a great point you bring out there. This is Rick Pitino all over again. You know, it happened at Louisville. The basketball program there is in shambles right now, and it's edging closer and closer to Michigan State. And like you say, these guys have to answer these allegations and step forward here. I'm a big Tom Izzo fan. I love him as a coach, but he's got to step up as a human being.
All right, crazy number on the way out here, Duquesne. Duquesne 0-17 straight up and 4-13 ATS after facing Rhode Island, 2-20 straight up and 9-13 against the spread before facing the Bonnies. They're getting GW tonight, Washington laying 3. I guess I'm going to ride this and take GW, the Colonials.
Yeah, the Colonials have same-season revenge. They're off an 18-point loss. The situation's really nice for George Washington tonight. Stay at home with the Colonials in that game.
Mark, it's always a pleasure, sir. Enjoy the Super Bowl.
I will do that, Gabe. You do the same. Be good.
Playbook.com, Playbook on your mobile device, Playbook Cube. It's worth checking out, guys. Wealth of information and props. We'll take a quick break. Gary and Thorne joins us next. We'll talk some more props. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Super Bowl 52 countdown continues as well. Gary and Thorne steps up. And then before we get to the Super Bowl, Gary, Kirk Cousins going to be available on the market. And the Washington Redskins have already moved on.
Yeah.
And they bring in Alex Smith, kind of shocked the world last night. Alex Smith, your take, Kirk Cousins, Alex Smith, is this, you know, Washington, the mainstream media seems to be thinking that the Redskins somehow took a step down. And I don't know, it seems like Kirk Cousins is getting talked about right now like he's Joe Montana or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the win-loss record, it doesn't really support much for Kirk Cousins, but he is someone who the advanced metrics like a little bit more than the win-loss record. But I feel like...
But isn't he kind of a numbers guy? Like, isn't Kirk Cousins a good fantasy quarterback more than a reality quarterback?
It's possible.
He doesn't win big games.
I feel like there's not a huge differentiation between him and Alex Smith.
Yes,
I think
exactly.
That's really long and short of it. And
yes.
That's where I can kind of see people getting on the Redskins, where you go, okay, so you're going to pay Alex Smith $25 million a year. Who's older.
Yeah, and why didn't you just pay Cousins
Just pay Cousins. Like, what's... Because to do
totally
this, you have to give
that.
Up a really good cornerback and a draft pick.
I can totally understand that.
So I don't really see why they do this deal. I mean, I think that, again, Alex Smith is someone who you could probably argue has a higher floor. Like, he's a safer quarterback than Cousins. You know exactly what you're getting from Alex Smith.
The Redskins need
every
to compete,
single
though.
Game.
I mean, they've got the Eagles going to the Super Bowl right now. You're dealing with the Dallas Cowboys. Listen, if I'm the Redskins, I probably would have just drafted a quarterback and moved on.
Well, that's the thing.
You got six guys in the first round that you could take.
We kind of talked about this a little bit off air today. We're just like the weird salary constructs you have to go through now to build your team around a quarterback. Because, you know, as easy as it is to say, like, why is Alex Smith making $25 million a year when quarterback A, B, and C is making A, B, and C? But we know where this is going. Any free agent quarterback who comes on the market is now the highest paid free agent quarterback.
Every
That's just
quarterback
how the market
breaks
is.
The previous record.
Exactly.
Matt
so,
Stafford, the last one, the next one. So basically now,
Cousins
Kirk
might
Cousins will
Smith.
Be the yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my deal with Cousins, though. I don't want to make him the richest player in NFL history, but you don't really have a damn choice.
No, which is why I feel like if you are the Redskins, draft a quarterback, take your chance on, you know, hitting on a guy who maybe not this year, but maybe next year. Third season on a rookie deal, on a rookie wage scale deal.
It was strange that that was my deal, too. From a football standpoint, if I'm the Redskins, you did a good job. If I'm a Redskins
fan, you're probably a better team now than you were yesterday. But
you got weapons. Exactly. You're not falling off the face of the earth. But in the grand scheme of things, you might as well have just went young and got a star quarterback. What's going to change? Exactly.
Yeah.
If everything falls into place, Alex Smith will go 10-6, get you to the playoffs, and you'll lose.
Well, exactly. Alex Smith is what Alex Smith is. Alex Smith's the guy who's going to get you to the playoffs, probably. And,
he
if
might
you're
win
Dan
one
Snyder,
game for you,
maybe that's what you want this season. I don't know. But it seems like a lot of money and a lot of assets you gave up to get a guy who, if I really had to like rank the quarterbacks in the NFL, is maybe like a spot or two spots ahead of Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I know. They're very. I tweeted that out immediately after. I said, same but different.
Yeah.
They're different
exactly.
styles, but... In
same,
the end,
same
yeah,
basic
you're the same
total. Yeah,
and as far as Kirk Cousins is concerned, Denver's the natural spot. If you're the Denver Broncos,
Von Miller's already come out and said today.
Yeah, I mean
they want Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, enough. If you're Von Miller, I mean you're wasting these. You're wasting Demaryius Thomas. You're wasting Emmanuel Sanders. You talked about it. John Elway tried it, Garrett. He tried the $450,000 quarterback with Simeon. He tried it. He said, you know what? I don't want to give all these guys $18 million. Didn't work.
They made the right move. They were the ones who were like, we're not paying Brock Osweiler. Good move.
Yeah.
Good move.
Well, they offered him $15 million. He wanted 17.
That's true. That is true.
So
they got
Elway,
lucky. They got lucky that first time.
Then he takes him back. But you hear what I'm saying? Elway's tried it
they tried
on the
it.
Cheap
they
for
did.
2 years.
Yeah.
It's backfired.
I think the way you got to look at it, like you were saying, is you look at the window you have as a franchise. And some of your key cornerstone defensive players, your wide receiver
core,
they're getting older. You maybe have 1 or 2 years left.
If you're Denver, you're not rebuilding. You've got guys that are there. You're not bringing in a Josh Allen to play with these guys. It's going to frustrate Miller. You bring in a Kirk Cousins, go, guys, Demaryius Thomas, Sanders, Miller, we got 3 years, 4 years here together, Max. We got you a QB. Let's get back to the Super Bowl.
Which, again, is why Washington's is such a weird spot, because it was never in my head like, oh, man, Washington's a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender. It's like, okay, they're just the same. They're the same team they were
before.
They
didn't
help
on defense's team. So, anyways, Super Bowl. So I know you heard me and Cam, Red Heat and Rage Radio. I was really focusing in on Danny Amendola.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be, you know, some people are like, oh, it's kind of obvious. Well, he's the number one wide receiver of a quarterback that throws the ball all the time to a team that doesn't run much against the Philadelphia Eagle team that's tough to run on, Gary. They're going
to
have more success throwing the ball than they are going
to
be running the ball.
And I will say, in the Eagles' defense, it's kind of funny. They're set up almost in the inverse in terms of their secondary and their linebackers to the Jaguars, where their strength as a defense in coverage is the middle of the field. Patrick Robinson, fantastic slot cornerback. Nigel Bradham, really good coverage linebacker. But I still think Amendola is going to do some damage. And the volume you talk about, you were saying 7, 8, 9 catches in this game. You go back since 2013. Tom Brady's had 88 pass attempts in the red zone in playoff games. 14 of those have gone to Danny Amendola. The only guy who has more is Edelman. Edelman obviously hurt. Yep. So Amendola, the poor man's Edelman.
Yeah.
He hasn't dropped any of those targets. He is the security blanket in this offense. And I think Danny Amendola to score a touchdown in this game is plus 175. I don't mind that. Danny Amendola to score the last touchdown in this game is 10-1.
Ooh,
and if you think the Patriots are going to play a close game,
playing from behind,
and
win
it at the end like they always seem to do,
so you're saying in that red zone, they're going to Amendola.
If I could bet Danny Amendola touchdown with under 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Was Amendola that made the sick catch with his feet when he went up there in the last game?
Amendola?
I think it was, yeah.
It might have been him. It
It was.
It was, okay.
Yeah. It was a great catch in the back of the end zone.
The top
thing with Amendola is, I've criticized him in the past, he's always been good. It's always been a health issue.
Yeah.
Earlier in his career, he couldn't stay on the field
with the
Rams.
Slot receivers. Like, you're going to run over and get killed.
But he stayed healthy.
Yeah.
The prop is 4.5. So we were talking about that book, UAger, you can build it up and they'll pay you more money.
Yeah.
I went up to 8 plus 300.
That's not bad.
8 catches isn't. Look, he was targeted 13 times against the Titans. He was targeted 9 times against the Jags. He had 11 catches in the first game, Titans,
and
7 against the
these
Jags.
These are high percentage targets,
and that Jags is arguably one of the best defenses in the NFL.
But his ADOT, Danny Amendola's not getting like 45-yard bombs down the field. We're talking 6-7-yard passes. These are high percentage passes and high percentage targets. So I like the catch total here. Like I said, I like him to score a touchdown in this game. I like him to score the last touchdown. I have a lot of like Patriots-centric props.
It's funny. I like the Eagles to win the game, but I'm going Patriots-centric prop. Deion Lewis. How do we not hit Deion Lewis?
There's just more to know about the Patriots. And that's the thing. Deion Lewis to be the leading rusher in this game.
And don't the Eagles have issues, though, catch with receivers, with wide receivers, with running backs catching passes?
Yeah, they haven't really utilized their running backs too well. I mean, Ajayi's one of those guys.
No, I'm saying defensively, though. Defensively, the Eagles have been burnt on a couple of bubble screens because they're aggressive, right? So you can sort of go over them.
I mean, Deion Lewis, like his yardage total for both rushing and
receiving
is intriguing.
It's 26.5 yards receiving.
It's not a lot, I know.
He only had 32 against Jacksonville, but he's had 26.5 or more in 5 or 6 football games.
And again, you look at some of the things he does and how often he's on the field. Again, so to be the leading rusher in this game, he's plus 150. Jay Ajayi's the one you have to lay money to put down in the books. I mean, the Eagles have like 17 running backs, and they use them all.
Yeah,
I think Deion Lewis is going to get the majority of the snaps here. I mean, he finished out the season with like 50 carries in his final two games.
The volume's been up.
It's been a little slower in the playoffs, but I mean, they never had the ball against
Jacksonville. We're not talking fantasy either. You're talking props here because James White poaches touchdowns.
Yeah, but he doesn't poach the yards.
No.
So I think he is going to be the leading
yards
guy. I
like White to score a touchdown in this
game. I like that too.
Dude, it's plus 187 for a guy that scores all the time.
Like, he scores in the playoffs. He's on the field.
Playoff games.
Yeah. I mean, here's another one I like that's kind of interesting too. Opening kickoff to not be a touchback is plus 155. Now, here's my reasoning on this one. The Patriots, we know what they're going to do. If they win the coin toss, they're going to defer to the second half.
That's
what they do, which means the Patriots will kick off to start the game.
Yeah.
Belichick this season, again, you can't – the Patriots are so good in so many areas. This one gets overlooked sometimes, but they're so good on special teams and so sound on special teams. They've been doing this thing all season long,
they prefer to pin you in. They don't even want it.
It to the one every time. So you have to run 24 yards to get up to the 25-yard line. They do not put the ball in the end zone anymore. So I think that, and even on the other side of the ball.
I remember the Jags starting from the 19 a couple of times, 17.
Tons of
exactly.
times. So many times because you don't have the option to kneel it in the end zone. And then on the other side of it, who knows? It's the Super Bowl.
And plus,
everyone's going to be on
Belichick's
their feet.
Belichick's a diabolical genius. Probably thinking they might fumble and just, you know what
yeah,
I mean? Your
just
percentages
more opportunities,
are higher.
Just
than,
penalties, holding penalties, like all these stupid things that could happen by taking it out of the end zone.
Slick prop right there.
And I think, too, like, you know, even if the Patriots have to return this kick.
They're both going to defer. It's the last 8 years in a Super Bowl
exactly.
in a row. Everybody defers.
But if the Patriots have to return this kick, I mean, who knows? Maybe the crowd noise, you're all amped up to the Super Bowl. Maybe runs it out anyway. But I think if they win the toss, this prop hits. So you're basically plus 155 to just say the Patriots are winning this toss because they won't kick this ball into the end zone on the opening kickoff. So I really like that one. And I'm with you on the sacks total.
Four and a half.
It's going over. But I'll say this. This is kind of an interesting wrinkle on this one. If you're on a site where you can parlay props together, take the over in sacks, which is minus 140, justifiably, people who like the over in this total, pair it with even money for there to be a roughing the passer call
Ooh.
In this game. We know the refs love to give Tom Brady his roughing the passer calls. There's going to be a lot of Eagles in the backfield
Garen's
in this game.
Garen's getting deep here, man. He's, my books don't even have this rushing
the passer. This is all on, I think it's on Bodog and Bovada. These are on Bodog and Bovada. You can find these. But even money for there to be a roughing the passer call in this game. I like that a lot.
Here's player total rushing receiving yards. We got to get out of here. So you combine rushing receiving yards. JGI, 82.5, over under.
Under. He doesn't catch the ball enough.
Corey Clement, 32.5.
That one's kind of interesting. I like Clement.
You know his rushing yards is 6.5, the prop.
I like that, too.
So you pop one for 7 yards.
I know.
What do you think about the quarterbacks? Over, under, 2.5. Feels like a trap a bit.
It really does. It really does. We talked about this yesterday. I like the over. I like the over in both.
Yeah, you got to take a chance you'll probably go 1-1, maybe 2-0. I doubt you go 0-2.
Foles, one time you just got to get him on the edge and he's got to rush. He's get
3 yards, even a little.
Tom Brady always takes those what should be 1.5 yard sneaks for 3 yards every time. I like the over on
those. Deion Lewis, over under 84.5 yards, total rush and receiving.
I'm going to take over.
That's your play, yeah.
Take the over, yep.
I can't disagree with that. Rex Burkhead, 30.5. James White, 40.5. James White's a touchdown guy. He's not, you know.
Yeah. I feel like, too, just going on the narrative of last year's Super Bowl, I don't think the Eagles want to get beat by James White.
And also, we got to get out of here. So who's going to win the game? What's your prediction for the game?
I think the Patriots pull it out. I think it's close, but I think the Patriots win.
Close game, Patriots win, so you take the 4.5 points.
I'm taking the 4.5 points, but I think the Patriots win.
I think it's a close game. I'm coming back 28-27, 30-27 in that ballpark. I think it'll be a higher scoring game. Yeah. We'll start off slow, and it'll
I like the under. I think it's like a 24-21 type
really,
game.
Really?
That
creeps out of the number. Yeah. All right, so check out Gary and on the rotation. It'll be breaking it down, Super Bowl 52. We'll come back with our plays of the day. What's up, everybody? I am Gabriel Morenci. It's time for my best bets of the day. Let's try to pad the bankroll for Super Bowl 52. We got to be quick. Let's start off in the association. Normally, I don't like laying 7 points, but the Pacers are in a great spot tonight. Memphis are not. I'll tell you what, the Atlanta Hawks, all they do is win and cover point spreads on their home court. Give me the Atlanta Hawks plus the 3. Miami Heat and the Cleveland Cavaliers. One thing I do know about the Cleveland Cavaliers, they don't play defense and they can't stop anybody. So let's go over 215 points in this basketball game. Everybody's going to shy away from the Celtics tonight, but the Knicks were on a 7-game road trip. And then they came home for one game, and now they're on the road the next night. Very tough spot. Like the Celtics this evening. Thanks to Mark Lawrence for the tip. Give me the Chicago Bulls. Probably my best NBA bet of the night. Love the Bulls plus 7. College basketball, give me George Washington minus 3. Providence, Seton Hall over 146. San Jose State, UNLV, go fight, win over 149. Another night you're on your own. May the winners be yours.